Philadelphia Union, San Jose Earth, DC United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
We literally just talking before we hit the record button. And I was saying to Sebastian Salazar, our guest on the Sphere of Roach, that this is going to be an interesting one. I feel like we are. This is going to be a conversation unlike any other that you or I have had in our time together. And it's, I don't know if it's going to get contentious or not. And I'm not even trying to be funny on that, which is sad because the conversation is going to be about something that both you, Sebi, and I are very, very passionate about. And most times we're passionate about it on the same side. This time's going to be a little bit different, though. Welcome, Sebi.
Well, look, I thank you for having me. I think first and foremost, it's important to realize what a big moment we're living in terms of soccer and the soccer history in D.C. and why it's so important. I think it's fair that we might have different perspectives on this at the end of the day, but nobody is saying that this is not an important moment. I think this is something we've been desperately longing for as D.C. soccer fans for a long time. And whenever you have a moment that should be, and I've seen people use the word like coronation or like finishing the crossing the line in a marathon, there should be really only one emotion. And the fact that there are others, I think, tells you that we're in a very strange place in D.C. soccer.
That was extremely well put. And I really want to get into all of that. Here's the first thing I want to do, though, Sebi. This is the Sphere of Roach. Everyone knows how passionate I am about soccer in general, but specifically DC United. I want to talk to the DC 101 listener first. And I think that's going to be a different kind of conversation and mindset than when we get into later on, where we start talking and discussing things as passionate DC United fans, and also to maybe people who are passionate DC United fans who are listening. But the first thing I want to do is I want to break down, or I want to do top line, top level stuff with Audi Field. And to a DC 101 listener who maybe has an awareness that we have a soccer team in the area, they've heard me talking about it on the radio for the last X amount of years, and now they've seen the ads and the news stories on all of the networks in the area that DC United has a new stadium, and specifically as we get closer, as we narrow it in, has a player that everybody seemingly has heard of. What does that mean for the casual sports fan in the DMV?
Well, Roach, you and I have talked about this a million times as we've talked about it once. Every time the TV ratings come out for a big soccer event, whether it's Champions League or World Cup or Women's World Cup, whatever it may be, the Washington, D.C. market and the surrounding areas always do well. So for those listeners who may not be soccer fans, there's probably a good chance somebody in their sphere of Roach is a somewhat consistent soccer fan or viewer. The numbers really suggest, and you know, there's other things about our city that we know. We know it to be very diverse and international, and I think that obviously plays into why we're such a, in some ways, a healthy soccer market. Where we're not a healthy soccer market is with our local domestic club. And anybody who's a casual sports fan will know this by the fact that they know very little probably right now about DC United other than what they've heard around the stadium. And Roach, I don't know I kind of do know your story and how you found the team.
Yep.
But I think everybody has a different story of how they came into being a fan of DC United. And a lot of it happened in late 90s, early 2000s, when the team did have some Q rating in the D.C. market.
Yes.
And I think the reality is that over the last, 5 to 10 years, with really an emphasis over the last 5 years, the team's relevance in this market has totally fallen off. And there's a lot of factors at play for that. But when you talk about having the casual sports fan know about what DC United is doing, we need to put that in the context. In the last 5 years, DC United, in terms of professional sports interest in the DC area, has been fifth in a four-horse race.
And I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I do see, you know, if we're a car stuck in the mud and our back wheels are just spinning and we know we're not getting out, But we put some cardboard under there. We put some kitty litter under there. We start seeing, oh, wait a second, that back wheel's starting to catch. We know that we're making progress, and that's what I hope. I'm not expecting, especially now that the Caps won the Stanley Cup. To me, hockey is the most vulnerable to being overtaken by MLS. Not in this town, obviously, right now. That's not going to happen anytime soon. I don't see them passing any of the other four major sports, but I do see a light at the end of the tunnel of, you know what, maybe we can say there are five major sports in the district. And to me, that's what Audi Field and Wayne Rooney start that conversation.
100%. You got to spend money to be relevant in this market, not just because it's a very transient sports market with a lot of people who come from other places, but because it's not the greatest sports market in a lot of ways. There are a lot of people who have interest beyond the sporting realm. So having a new stadium, while 10 years ago in MLS, that might have put you at the head of the pack, in 2018 Washington, D.C., that's a bare minimum requirement. Having a superstar, and however you want to define where in his superstardom Wayne Rooney is, and I think you and I probably disagree quite a bit on that, he is a superstar. And we've seen, and it's interesting you mentioned the Caps example, it takes a superstar oftentimes to make a non-hockey city, which I'll say D.C. was before Ovechkin got here, into now what's a hockey-crazed town coming off the heels of the Stanley Cup run. I think you have to have a new stadium, you have to have a superstar, and beyond that, you have to have a consistently winning team. If you have any chance of being relevant in this market, soccer or not, and I think that's really important, but now D.C. United is starting to have checked some of those boxes. In the past, they haven't even really been in the same ballpark to check.
Yeah, and I think you and I both go into this with our blinders off. You being working at ESPN, you probably deal with it a lot more than I do. But where I work, I deal with it a lot where, you know, people kind of... this might be too strong of a way to put it. People kind of pat my head when I say that I'm a huge soccer fan. Like, oh, that's cute. When are you going to start watching the Nationals? I'm actually a big soccer fan. I love DC United. Oh, you like the team that I like? It's that kind of mentality where, and I feel like you're the same way. I take that because I realize that there's a lot of work to be done. And like I said, this is starting that process. But I take a lot of solace in the fact of, first of all, the location of Audi Field. You can see Audi Field from Nats Park. So if somebody's at Nats Park and they're oblivious to soccer and they look out the home plate side of Nats Park and they go, hey, what's that over there? Somebody will then tell them that's where the soccer team plays. And I gotta think there will be some shred of them that goes, really? In that big of a place? And these are the kind of steps that have begun the process of Audi Field opening and Wayne Rooney coming on the team.
You're 100% right that being visible matters. And let's not overlook the fact that this stadium is in the urban core,
yep.
Right? It's in the district. There are a lot of MLS teams that, because they weren't patient, didn't have the means, were operating at a different funding level than maybe DC United was in getting this stadium project done, had to settle for stadiums in the suburbs. And that takes you out of the conversation both geographically, and I think that has a big, big connection to how relevant you are within your sports market. And so you're right, being a mile away from that stadium puts you in conversations that you've taken yourself out of in recent years. Being on the front page of the Washington Post, people can say folks don't read newspapers. It still matters, and it definitely matters in this town. That's a level of relevance DC United hasn't had. Sports talk radio, which, Roach, you know this around here, it's
yep.
90% Redskins, even when the Caps are lifting the Stanley Cup. So the fact that I've gone on a couple different sports talk radio stations to talk about Wayne Rooney and a new soccer stadium is, again, access into that casual, everyday fandom that DC United has just had really, really little of over the last 5 years.
So there's your backstory. There's two more things I want to just get your input on before we tell the casual listeners of the Sphere of Roach. This was your Audi Field DC United updates. Feel free to go out about the rest of your day, and then we'll get into the real stuff. Audi Field. Now, I know there was a, and it's not even a hiccup, there was a major problem that occurred on Saturday for the first match against Vancouver Whitecaps, DC United at Audi Field. I'm alluding to it here. If you're curious and like, oh, what's the major thing? We'll get into it in probably about 5 minutes. But as a casual fan, you were, not you, you're the hardcore fan, but you were there at Audi Field on Saturday. As if you're talking to a casual sports fan who has an open mind to seeing events and things to do in D.C., why is Audi Field different than going to see the soccer team that I don't know a lot about at RFK Stadium?
One, I think it's in a really interesting part of town. You know, I didn't know that area a ton. But having gone down there and spent, I think I got in around like 3 p.m. or so on game day.
Lot to do, man.
And being able, yeah, there's a lot to do. We walked around Navy Yard, had a good dinner there at Iowa 301, kind of pregame dinner. Beautiful walk. It's a long walk. I think the folks who can get exercise might not mind the fact that it's a little bit far away from the metro station. I think that might come into play a little bit more when the weather's not as perfect as it was, Roach, on opening night. When you got to walk a long way and then you factor in the fact that the stands of the stadium are not completely covered. If there's some nasty weather, I could see it being a little bit more like RFK than maybe some of the folks want to admit.
Interesting.
But I think it's a beautiful stadium that's very, very tight. It's extremely intimate. The for any of our fans, and Roach, you're perfect for this. You're from Philly. You'll remember the Vet. The upper level of the Vet is like climbing a pyramid. It's so steep, and it leads to you feeling like you're literally on top of the action. And I think that's a feel that you get inside Audi Field that is unique, not just for American sports, but really even in terms of soccer stadiums around the world. This is a really tight stadium. There are some limitations to the space, the footprint that the organization had to work with. So they had to get 20,000 seats in really tight. I think if you're a skinny person, it's a lot more friendly stadium than if you're not. I think we have to be honest about the size of the seats. The seats are very narrow.
Size of the seats and the steepness of having to walk up to get to those seats are two things that are not conducive for the weak of heart.
No, but it does add a level of intensity to the ambiance there. I really wish they would have completed the roof. I think that would take the noise inside the stadium to another level. And I think when you get 20,000 people that really care about a thing, as you will find DC United fans really care about their team, and you jam them in there and potentially the team plays like they did in the Audi Field opener against Vancouver, which was pretty impressive, I think you could have an atmosphere that's unique in DC sports, for sure.
So, first off, I agree with everything you've said. I was there on Saturday. Obviously, I was sitting in the baller seats, my season tickets. You, the ESPN guy, were not in the baller seats. So from your view, which, look, you didn't have the best view in the house. In fact, I'd argue you had one of the worst views in the house. How was your view from that quote-unquote worst seat in the house?
It was great. And you're right. It was pretty much the worst ticket. If you think about where I was almost last row in the stadium behind the goal. But again, and folks will notice this, and some folks may like it. You know, my mom went to the game, and it was the first thing she said when I asked her what she thought was, it's a very small stadium.
Yes.
So even if you're in the last row of the upper deck, you're in a pretty good position relative to the field. And that's what I noticed with my seats. The seats that I actually have that are season tickets are section 106, which is like right on the 50-yard line. But my mom and dad were in those. So they had the 50-yard line view, and their pictures that they showed me after the game were spectacular.
Yes.
I mean, you're literally like sitting over as if you were at a cafe, sitting over and watching a professional soccer match in front of you. It's a really, I think there's the not a bad seat in the house. You hear a lot of times when people talk about facilities. But when you have something so tight and small as has been created over at Buzzard Point, it really adds to that. But, Roach, I would say from my perspective, there were some things that were obviously missing. There wasn't a second scoreboard.
No.
Like, for me, from where I'm sitting, I could see the scoreboard directly above the supporter section. But if I'm in the supporter section, I have to crane my neck every time I want to see a highlight. That, to me, is that's like a really obvious sign of not wanting to spend extra money. And I think when you see a new stadium and you see a $400 million price tag, and then you get in, you expect Space Age. You expect the Jetsons. And to not have a second scoreboard, to not have some of those other creature comforts that I've seen in other MLS stadiums that I know are out there that are technologically reasonable requests, weren't met. So I think as beautiful and as simple as it was, there are some other things that if you really want that high-end premium stadium experience, you might say, hey, this seems like it was left out.
Absolutely. And I chalked that up and a couple of other things up to the stadium's not done yet, which, again, we'll get into in the part two of this conversation. Stadium is absolutely 100% not done yet. I would put it at maybe 85%, which in Scholastic terms is fantastic, but as far as the stadium is concerned, that's a long way from being done. And I think things like that, things like the completion of the roof, as of right now, this is weird to say, as of right now, if it rained, the players on the bench and the coaching staff are not covered, which to me is like, that's Stadium 101. Like, even RFK had the little half oval things that you put out when it rained so that the bench was covered. So for me, the stadium is not done yet. And I would hope, and I have my fingers crossed, that the stadium being done will include finishing off the roof, putting in, making sure that second clock is somewhere, putting the permanent signage up rather than the tarps. I talk all that stuff up to the stadium not being done. The hype man, that guy's got to go.
Yeah, you know what? You're not the first person to make that suggestion. A lot of people were against that. And I think that touches on some other issues with this front office and the vibe that they're trying to create in the new stadium. They are clearly looking for something different from RFK. There's many different ways in which they've showed that. The hype man was maybe the most clear and obvious. But, Roach, while I appreciate your sentiment that, well, the stadium's not 100% done, okay, so instead of laminated signs telling you what section you're in,
yes,
the next time you go, those signs will be real. But when you talk about finishing off the roof, those are not finishing the stadium. Those are, at this point, what would have to be considered add-ons, like future down the road. And those things are not coming in the meantime. There was some really basic stuff. I told you my folks were sitting in section 106. Those are pretty good seats. And yet when the sun sets,
oh, it's horrible.
You're blind. You're blind.
Horrible.
And you're cooking on top of that. So these are little things that you think, if you're putting in $400 million, and again, that's the price tag that's being floated out there, you know, for, I think, other motives. But if you're saying $400 million and there's some basic things that are wrong with it, then I think you really have to question kind of where did that $400 million end up at? Like, how did we end up in a stadium that has this massive price tag yet doesn't have some basic things? That to me is not – those aren't decisions that were made intentionally. Those are decisions that were made incorrectly.
So before we wrap up this part of the conversation, this is on field as it pertains to the DC United team, not the club, not the front office. You had a chance to see Wayne Rooney. That is the guy that the casual DC sports fan probably has at least heard the name Wayne Rooney. And if we're going to get looky-loos coming to a match for the first time, to see the team, we'll get into the off-field stuff in part two. Wayne Rooney's the reason that they're buying a ticket. What did you see in that 30-minute cameo appearance from Wayne Rooney that would warrant the looky-loos going, oh, okay?
I mean, one thing is very clear to me when you watch Wayne Rooney play, especially when you watch him play at the level that is Major League Soccer in 2018, which is a growing level and a level that it wasn't at even 2-3 years ago. The league is improving on an annual basis. He has an amazingly clean touch. And it's a vision and a precision and a timing that makes everybody else around him better. And you hear other sports fans talk about this all the time, right? There's some guys in some sports that just make the dudes around them better. And because, one, Wayne Rooney was at one point an elite world-class talent, and two, the guys on his team currently are not, he is going to raise their level by what he can do on the field. And you saw that. Paul Arriola, who's a good player, suddenly looked like, you know, he could lead MLS in scoring. and Paul Arriola, for you know, the non-soccer fans out there, is really like a hustle and bustle kind of guy. He's got some quality for sure. He's got some speed. But nobody out there is expecting Paul to score two goals a game. He scored two great goals. One was a really nice team buildup, and the other is a banger from distance. I mean, Wayne Rooney is going to make the team around him better. It's going to make him more watchable. It's going to make him more enjoyable in the final third. They're going to be more attractive for either fans currently who are DC United fans or just neutral fans around MLS. They're going to be fun to watch with this guy. Are they going to be good? Are they going to win titles? I don't know that just with Wayne Rooney and the roster that we see, they're there yet. Wayne Rooney is good, and I want people to appreciate how good he is relative to the talent around him. But that doesn't make him one guy on a team that has been dead last in MLS for the better part of a year and a half suddenly make them contenders for anything real.
It's weird because he makes the team, and he made the team more fun to watch without the flashiness. And I'm gonna go to another sport just to make sure our casuals know what I'm talking about. He's not Cam Newton, where he's going to bulldoze a linebacker on his way for a 30-yard touchdown run. He's more like Tom Brady, where he just doesn't do anything wrong so that everybody else looks like Danny Amendola looks like a fantastic wide receiver. Meanwhile, he's been a journeyman until this point because Tom Brady gives him the ball in every position that allows him to excel. And that's what Wayne Rooney kind of brought to DC United, where he didn't do anything where you were like, oh my gosh, that was an amazing play, and I'm not even a soccer fan. He just made the entire game more exciting by making everybody else look good, by getting them the ball in positions where they could excel.
And on some nights, Roach, that's going to be more than enough. But let's be honest about what they're paying this guy, too, right? The club is paying this guy, you know, $15 million for a couple years' service. And we'll give the other perfect example here. Look what Zlatan Ibrahimovic did coming over from also Manchester United. I mean, Rooney comes via Everton, but essentially out of that same talent level. And Zlatan in this first game does provide that viral moment and does score the goals. And does get on Jimmy Kimmel and do all those other things. So Wayne Rooney is class, and there's going to be little things that he does that are going to definitely make DC United better. But he's got to do the big things, too. He's got to score the goals. He's got to score the highlight quality goals. And he's got to make this team, as much as he as one guy can, again, on a team that's not all that talented, much more competitive. Because that's what's being asked of a guy that's being paid by far the most money that DC United has ever paid any single player in club history. He can't just be a functional forward, Roach. He's got to be a lot more than that. I think that is where, when you talk about Wayne Rooney, those of us that have concerns about his output, his productivity at this age and at this point in his career are saying, hey, we know he's going to be the best player on DC United, but you're paying him to be a dominant player in the league. And that guy does have to do special things, things that jump off the page to the soccer nerd and the soccer rube alike.
DC United has a ton of games in the next 3 months at this new Audi Field. So for the casual DC 101 listener, if you're looking for something to do, check out DC United at Audi Field. I hope that was not too in-depth, and I hope that kind of got you going. You know what? I want to go check out one of those matches, because that wraps up part one of this conversation. Now, if you're interested in Sebi and I getting into a little bit, if you're interested in the huge, huge negative that happened on Saturday for the opening of Audi Field, if you're interested in the off-the-field supporter stuff that is very, very contentious right now, that's going to happen literally as we speak. But if you are signing off, thank you very much for listening. And I think we're going to start, Sebi, where we left off, just to keep it nice and smooth, and that's Wayne Rooney, because here are the downsides. First, Vancouver, not that great, A, on the road, B, defensively, and C, they came a long way to play in a really unusual circumstance for them, which is the opening of a new field where the opponent is gassed to the gills, and they are just treating this as just another road trip, road game in MLS during a long regular season. And then B, what you said, which is he didn't oh wow anybody if you want to have the rose colored glasses, which I kind of did, he had some really good link up play. He had a really good relationship with Lucho Acosta. He laid it off to the guys in positions where they could excel. He didn't really do anything. And as I know, because I was in my baller season ticket seat, 15 minutes in, brother was gassed. He is not fit, which is not a slight to him. He's still, if he was still playing in Europe, he'd be in his preseason warm-up. But he is not more than 30 minutes fit right now, and I don't see him being a 60-minute player till at least the middle of next month.
Yeah, guys coming over always struggle. You and I were around the team in a lot in 2012, and the European guys that come over, especially mid-season, especially seem to struggle. So I don't think that's a surprise to anyone.
No.
I think the point is this, you know, and again, it comes back to money, and sometimes I feel foolish saying that, right, because it's not my money. But I think it's important to note that Rooney is, we don't know what we're getting with Rooney. And if you assume that what you know you're getting is this Q rating and the splash, then the game should have been sold out, Roach.
Yes.
And it wasn't. And so then you look at the on the field and you say, all right, he was the best player in a game of Vancouver Whitecaps and DC United. Now, I actually think Vancouver in some ways is a perfect measuring stick because they are dead even 500, basically sixth place right on the playoff line in the West. They're essentially like what MLS's sink or swim line is. So the fact that you were pretty clearly better than them, I think, you know, it gives you some hope for maybe being able to make up some of these points in the long haul in the end of the season. But when you talk about electrifying people, bringing people back into the stadium, if I'm just coming to see Wayne Rooney and I saw him play for 30 minutes and take a couple clean touches, that's not the Wayne Rooney that I came to see, right? I came to see Wayne Rooney doing what he did at Manchester United 5 years ago. I don't know if that's realistic at this point to expect from Wayne Rooney, even at MLS level. So I think we, as nice as the win was, as great as the stadium was, as clean as Rooney's touch were, we really still have to make sure that we're holding the bar up as high as it should be, given what this guy costs, what his resume is, and the position that this team is in going into a new stadium and making this player their first real marquee signing.
Sebi appeared on the ESPN podcast, Max and Herc, discussing the supporters issue. And I allude to that now because that's a great companion piece to this. You'll get more in-depth talk from Sebastian Salazar, Hercules Gomez, Max Bretos on this subject that we are about to get in. I bring it up now, though, because I feel like this conversation is going to be a big do-si-do between you and I where there's going to be a but. And the but invariably will come back to the front office. This stinks. And I'm going to tell you this right now, Sebi. This absolutely stinks. And you said at the beginning of the podcast, this should be a time where everybody should universally have great feelings about this club for all the reasons that you've mentioned and we've discussed in the first half of this podcast. And I hate the fact that it's everything has this bittersweet feeling hanging over top of it. And I want to come back and lash out at the front office every single time that I get into this kind of mindset. But then I also think to myself, I start do-si-do-ing with myself. And this is the number one reason why I wanted to have you on, Sebi, is because I'm tired of dancing by myself. I need a dancy partner to do my do-si-do with. My butt is that. That game would have been sold out in April if the front office wasn't playing games trying to get everybody to sign up for season tickets and dangling the carrot of being at the first game as the way to get you to sign up for the rest of the season. If they had just said, we are fine with how many season ticket holders we've signed up, we know in our back pocket, which we haven't announced yet, we're signing Wayne Rooney, that will bring a lot of new eyes and a new faces and a new revenue stream in jersey sales coming up in the next 6 weeks. We are going to release tickets for sale for the inaugural match. It would have sold out in a day and a half. But because they didn't, and they wanted to wait to the last possible second to get people to sign up for season tickets, up until Friday, where the match starts on Saturday. That's the only reason why that match didn't sell out. And so the narrative that, hey, Wayne Rooney didn't really sell out the stadium is false, because he would have sold out if people had access to buying tickets to that game, which the front office refused to give them.
Roach, I think this is a perfect way to summarize what this front office is, and you and I can both speak to how it's different from previous front offices. And that is that this front office is seemingly only motivated by the ability to now maximize profit within the new stadium. Before the stadium, all that we heard was everything we have is going into the new stadium. So don't expect any extra expenditures around the team, in the front office, anywhere else. And the fan base just kind of took that and accepted it, understanding that there's 15 years of this fan base and this team trying to get a stadium in D.C. But now this ownership must do more than just make sure it's in the black. And I think when you see the way that they've treated, so whether it's season ticket holders or the ticket approach, the approach to selling tickets for July 14th, it has been, let's maximize our guaranteed profits as much as we can. And I don't think that's the best way to fill Audi Field. And I think they saw that, and I hope that they saw that in what was not, even though it was announced as a sellout, what was not on the day of, a game that you couldn't get tickets to. There were tickets readily available.
Let's get into the big thing on Saturday. A railing fell off, I won't say the upper deck, but there's a significant landing from a railing falling off to then it hitting the actual ground. And it hit a DC United employee. Fortunately, at least judging by the club and what sources inside the club have said, she was not seriously injured. She stayed. She watched the match. She just didn't continue with her duties while on site. But from all, you know what? I don't even have to speculate. A railing falling off of a new stadium has the potential to be catastrophic. And the fact that it wasn't was a major bullet dodged for the club. The fact that it did not hit a fan is a second major bullet dodged by the club. I mentioned earlier during the casual fan podcast version of the podcast, 85% done. 85% done, you got to make sure the railings are secured correctly.
Roach, this is, to me, this can only be described as a catastrophic failure. This bottom line failure to provide a safe environment for your fans to watch a game in, to me, is unacceptable and really, like, in many ways, unforgivable. How do you trust people who opened a stadium that wasn't ready and wasn't safe? How do you trust them again? I think, like, way too often in sports, we use sports as a morality play. And I get it that it's not. I get it that in so many ways it's a business, and that's what comes first. But there was a motive to open that stadium up on July 14th. You'll have to ask the ownership what that motive was. But everybody who had followed that project, either from a media standpoint or from a fan standpoint, or even if you just lived over in that neighborhood and you walked by that stadium, you knew that July 14th was a stretch. And so the fact that this stadium was opened and was opened in a state where an employee was injured, and I don't know what you've heard about it behind closed doors. I'll tell you two things that I've heard about it from sources. One, it was very, very close to being very serious for the employee that was injured. And two, I don't know that the severity of her injuries are as not severe as you may have made them out to be. I think there's more information to come in the coming days on that. And I think that it just can't be overstated. Like all that we've talked about is really irrelevant if somebody gets hurt on opening day. You know, that's the bottom line for me. Nothing else matters. Wayne Rooney doesn't matter. Soccer in the city doesn't matter. If the people responsible for providing a safe space for fans and employees to work around soccer in this city can't get it right, then nothing else matters, because no one will ever go through the doors if that trust isn't rebuilt.
So the last thing on this, this, and I agree with you, this is a major issue. And the weird thing about this is it feels like this is being chuckled off. And I don't...
No, Roach. It is being chuckled off.
Okay, because...
Jason Levien, the managing partner, was on the Kojo Namdi show the other day and laughed and said this would go down in stadium lore. I mean, you know me, Roach. I'm going to be real here. You know me. It hurts me to feel like I'm attacking the club. I love DC United. I have been a fan since I was a kid. I want nothing more than this club and this stadium to succeed. But the people in charge of it are not doing it right. And if they screw up and sign Wayne Rooney and the team struggles for 5 years, we can all live with that. The stakes are much higher, and we saw that with this incident that happened on Saturday. They're much, much higher than just messing up a soccer team. And I can't overstate that, man. Like, I do not want to be the bad guy attacking this club. But they are providing unsafe spaces, and then on top of that, laughing it off. The managing partner laughed it off, Roach. That happened.
So it's a difficult pivot. I'm going to try to make it right now. The thing is, the employee who was injured, I feel like, is literally the communications department, which sums up, as I'm trying to pivot away from that uncomfortable event, it's very, very difficult to be a spokesperson for a team when you are out of commission. And this isn't like when you and I had, and you worked for DC United, and I had dealings with DC United, and there were it was a fully funded, fully staffed front office. You take this person out of play. Who's coordinating the interviews with Sky Sports overseas? Who's the one planning out the next phase of the promotional rollout and marketing campaign for Audi Field? Who's doing all that? Because she wears so many hats. If you lose her, it's an event that, if you take out what happened to her, if she was on maternity leave, if she left and got married, what she did earlier in the season, who then picks up the ball on your major league franchise with your worldwide superstar who needs media handling?
So let's pull the curtain back entirely here. You and I worked for the team in 2012. That's when the ownership change occurred. The current ownership came in and wiped out the front office. And it was a front office that had decades of institutional experience as it pertained to DC United. And that front office, both the quality of the work that was being done, but also the institutional knowledge that is so critical when you're running a sports franchise, was never replaced. And what's happening currently with the employee you're mentioning is a perfect example of how this franchise and this ownership group has run things on the cheap, and they've given too many people within this front office too much responsibility. And that's not to take a swipe at people that are working 60 or 70 hours a week to make soccer in DC work. Those people are doing God's work. But what's happening is they're being spread too thin. And that's an MO of this current front office, that they do not whenever there's somebody leaves the front office, the way in which they're replaced is not a like-for-like replacement, to borrow a soccer term. So, yes, on top of what happened on Saturday that was terrible, it's a symbol of what's happening within this club and this front office. Things are done on the cheap, and so when anyone isn't available, the organization struggles to run. And I would suggest that we didn't really get into it, but it's a big part of why what's happened currently, the beef between the front office and the supporters groups, even exists. Because the people that you and I worked with in 2012 never would have let it get to this place. And the people who are now running this front office don't understand the history of the club. And so they have failed to maintain the relationships in a meaningful way that would avoid the problems that really clouded over what should have been one of the greatest days in DC soccer history, for sure, which is a rich history, but also in DC sports history. And those failures have happened because the people running the team have not either the experience or the resources necessary to make things run right.
All right, it's time to get into it. My default position on this issue, and the issue is going to be upper management front office and the ownership group versus the supporters groups. And you brought up a really good point that I want to reiterate right now before we get into it. I have no ill will to the front office that do the day-to-day operations for the team. This employee wears a million hats. If anything, I feel sympathy for her because I'm like, wow, this person is doing way too much for what is necessary to run a professional franchise. This ownership group, and this is where I'm going to start with this, Sebi, you were at that press conference in 2012. This ownership group's number 1 through 10 priority was, we're going to get a stadium built. Sebi, they got the stadium built. They made no bones about anything else being important to them other than we're building that stadium. They got the stadium built. At the end of the day, no matter how this whole supporter group thing is resolved, no matter when Tohir sells his shares to the richest doctor in America and moves on, no matter any of that stuff, they got the stadium built. And that's the only thing they said was important to them. Do they get credit for that, or does that not matter now that the stadium is built?
That's a really complex question, Roach, and it's very fair. And I think Kyle Sheldon, our good friend, yep, former DC United employee, really hit it on the head with his tweet on Saturday, which was, having worked in the front office for almost a decade, this guy had worked on 3 different press releases for 3 different stadium announcements that never went through. And so as DC United fans, as the club, we've really been waiting, and we've been kind of emotionally yanked around on when and where this team was going to finally have its stadium. So when these folks came in and promised that they would, come hell or high water, get it done, a lot of people held their breath and rolled their eyes and thought, all right, I'll see it when I can believe it. And even as it pushed through each round of legislation, D.C., locally, people kind of said, I'll believe it when I see it. So when it's actually built and there's actually a team playing it, some part of you says, wow, they did it. They really did the impossible. But what I would suggest to kind of wrap that thought up is you can't have to do the impossible. If you open a stadium, it's got to be ready and it's got to be safe. And if you open a stadium in D.C., which is an important soccer market, not just domestically, but potentially globally, right? As we talk about super cities and Washington, D.C. being one of the more important cities on the global scene in the next 20 to 30 years. You can't have a stadium that has people being blinded by the sun for a 7 p.m. kickoff. You can't have a stadium that doesn't have a full roof. You can't have a stadium that has all of these very obvious and clear shortcomings. So while getting the stadium done was the most important thing, and you would take it and you'd take it with all the warts and whatever that it has, I think we do have to say, like, hey, they got the stadium done, but they didn't really get it done in a complete and fulfilling manner. And on top of that, and I know there's a lot of DC United fans that said this at one point, that we'd sell your soul for the stadium. Well, guess what?
Yep.
We have.
How does it feel?
Soul. It feels kind of empty. It feels like a new home that has a lot of other people excited, but I feel kind of empty. I felt kind of empty on Saturday night. I didn't feel as though I was celebrating each goal or each moment or the night in its totality as I thought I would have, having waited for this moment for 20 years. If at the end of the day, the goal was the stadium, fine. But for me, the end of the day was always DC United being relevant, healthy, and an important club, not just in terms of soccer domestically, but in the Washington, D.C. community. And I don't think that those things are really happening right now under the current ownership. So, yeah, we got our stadium, but we don't have our soul anymore. And the soul is really what made DC United special. It's what brought a lot of people into become fans of this club.
Part two of that. The ownership group said, we're not doing anything revenue related until we have revenue coming in. That's it. They didn't say once revenue comes in, everybody gets what they want. It was, we're not spending money until that stadium is built. Now, what I will say is, if I'm a member of a supporter group, I feel really, really used right now because they had no problems enlisting us to go to the meetings and bring the soccer atmosphere to city council meetings to show what could happen. I'll give you that. However, their official statements have always been, we're not spending money until the stadium is built. Here's what I'll say to you, Sebi. The stadium is built. They're spending money.
They're spending a little bit of money.
This is you say a little bit of money. I will tell you Wayne Rooney. I will tell you training ground in Loudoun County. I will tell you comments from the general manager and the coach, who have both seemingly been led to believe that there will be more high-priced pieces coming in to strengthen the squad, if not before the end of this season, over the winter transfer window. The team, you can't say that the team is not spending money. They are spending money. Maybe they're not spending money. They're writing the checks to things that you don't think they need to write checks to, but they are writing the checks. They are spending the money, which is exactly what they said they would do when the stadium got here.
If you want to take solace in the fact that they are finally doing the bare minimum requirement to have a team be somewhat competitive, then that's fine. I'm all for applauding people for doing the bare minimum. This is very much a participation trophy conversation we're having, Roach. Being a Major League Soccer owner in the year 2018 requires real serious commitment, okay? The league isn't what it was in 2015. The league isn't what it was in 2010. A now new shiny downtown stadium is not a panacea, okay? And spending a little bit of the money that you now have from these revenue streams, which, by the way, when we talk about that $400 million, don't forget, $150 million of that was the city's money going for land acquisition. So this is very much a publicly funded proposal. And DC United as a sports team is very much a public trust. So I think when we say, oh, well, you know, they did the bare minimum. They got a stadium that the city chipped in half the rate for. We should be happy. And now they're spending a few peanuts here and there to bring us an aged Wayne Rooney. I don't think asking the bare minimum is acceptable anymore. We let them give the bare minimum for 5 years. The team was terrible. The personnel was awful. There was no star power. There was no marketing power in this city. Nobody talked about this team. It went into a brownout for the last 5 years from like a media standpoint, from a media relations, media relevance standpoint, because they didn't spend any money. When you talk about Wayne Rooney, that's not spending in 2018. That's making up what hasn't been spent since 2012. That's their marketing budget from 2012 to 2017. That's why they needed Rooney to come close to a sellout on opening night, Roach, because they hadn't been doing the work for the last 5 or 6 years. So let's not applaud them for back pay. Let's not do that. Let's set a higher bar. Let's demand more of our billionaires who we've helped out. I mean, is that so much to ask?
I'm going to assume that if you are listening to this, you are least aware of the basics of the supporters group situation between the Screaming Eagles, the Bar Brava, and the District Ultras. I'm going to assume that as we continue the conversation, because honestly, the backstory would take time away from the conversation that I want to have. Sebi, you've been very, very passionate and very outspoken about what you believe are some of the undertones of this situation. The situation is DC United choosing, and that's what it was, they chose to work with Screaming Eagles over the other two supporters groups. I will tell you, just to get into this conversation head first, some of it has rubbed me the wrong way as somebody who is paying for a season ticket, who wants to enjoy professional soccer in an atmosphere that my hope is comparable to what you see in Portland or Atlanta or overseas. But at the end of the day, I want to see a team in my neighborhood play soccer on a high level. So the insinuations, and this isn't coming from you, but the insinuations from Twitter and the public outcry of what we need to do to support the supporters groups is starting to rub me the wrong way, and I'm starting to get fatigued over the what I personally have to do to help out or support or rally around the supporters groups. I know that's where we part ways, but that's for me. If you're going to say, if you want, I'll give you the platform to say what the undertone is, or we can just get into the undertones. I'll leave it up to you.
Go ahead.
For me to broadly stroke the this is because of where we want to bring out the Latino elements of DC United's fan groups and bringing the upper middle class suburban white version of DC United's supporters group is painting in too broad of a stroke for somebody. And by the way, not even white, but I consider myself middle class. I have the means to buy season tickets that are not in the supporters groups areas. So that probably puts me on a level higher than the blue collar Latino that you are referring to, that you feel is being shunted to the side in the new era of DC United. But also why does that stroke have to be painted with me, I guess?
Look, we're getting into really complicated issues here, and issues of identity, and I think it's an interesting conversation. So I'm glad we'll have it. My basic point in all this has been, DC United as a club already knows what their most engaged fan base is. If they look back at their history, they know when they had their biggest share of the pie, when they were selling the most tickets. They know what that fan base looked like in Washington, D.C. And it was, in large parts, Latino.
Yep.
Now, the people running the team at the very beginning understood that, understood how to work both with that community, with leaders within that community. And that's not just Latinos. That's people who were in charge of the Screaming Eagles at the time and so far down the road, District Ultras, La Norte, Barra Brava, all of those groups. The folks in charge now come from different backgrounds. And my big point is this, Roach. I think representation matters. And I think the people who are running DC United's front office now have very specific backgrounds. They are either from Monumental Sports, which is the company that anybody in DC will know owns Wizards, Caps, Mystics, the indoor, the arena football leagues now, and owns Verizon Center. And for instance, one of the top people in the front office, Tom Hunt, comes from beyond that, a ticketing background, selling premium level NBA seats. When all you know is how to sell to one group of people, you may think that that group of people is your only target audience. And the history of DC United tells us that that's not the case for soccer in DC. So I'm not saying don't go after the middle class, suburban, urban fans. What I am saying is don't go after a fan that doesn't exist and turn your back entirely on fans that do exist and may have already been inside or under your umbrella at one point. It doesn't have to be an either or. And just because people are focusing their efforts on a more affluent fan doesn't necessarily mean it was a wide spread conspiracy to turn away the Latino demographic. But if that's the end result of it, I still think it's a problem. And I still think it's important to point out when it's happening, because if representation isn't real within the front office of DC United, it is real within the fan base. And unfortunately for them, it is real within the media that covers DC United. So it may not matter to everybody else in the media. But as a Mexican American and a Hispanic kid that grew up at RFK rooting for DC United, it matters to me. So when I see it happening, I'm going to say something about it. And that doesn't mean that everybody who's bought a ticket is gentrifying DC United's fan base. But it does mean that DC United's ownership, I believe, has some level of debt to the people who truly kept this thing going for 10 or 15 years when nobody wanted to invest in it. And a lot of those people happen to be blue-collar Latino fans. That's all I'm saying. Don't forget about them now that you've got a shiny new stadium and you think you can bring somebody in that has a little bit deeper pockets and might spend a little bit more on all the extra things in the stadium on game day. Let's not forget what the real soccer community of DC is.
This is the saddest part about this whole thing. It's the divisiveness that has come within people who all want to do the same thing, which is go to a match and cheer on DC United. And it was so, for me, the most heartbreaking part was when I got there with my 10-year-old, we wanted to do a lap around, like outside the stadium, just to see the entire structure in its entirety before we went into our seats. And we went in, as we were walking around, Barra Brava members were milling around pre-gaming as well. This is before the march. And Screaming Eagles were walking by, and it was a shouting match. And I'm looking at this going, all you guys are all on the same page in your love of DC United, but because your management group is fighting with your management group, which is fighting with the club's management group, now you guys hate each other, and we can't go in there and scream our hearts out for DC United because of this is where we ended up. That's the worst part, Sebi.
I compared it to a family reunion where there's beef in the family and one side didn't show up. Like, you might have had a good time at the game, but you knew something was off, and you knew the thing that was off was deeper than anything that was happening on the surface. And I think it's, and you can appreciate this, Roach, because you work in the bigger media landscape, but you're a soccer guy. We're the outsiders, and for so long we have been. So when you meet somebody else that's a soccer person, you really connect. And when you meet somebody else that's a DC United fan in DC, you really connect. It's like, oh my God, you like the band that I like. Yep. And there's an instant bond there.
Yep.
And that family, whether you were Barra, whether you were Screaming Eagles, whether you like you were like me and my folks who sat on the, you know, air quote, quiet side of RFK Stadium, whether you were a team employee, you had some vested interest, some tie to that family and to that sense of a reunion every time you walked into RFK. I was worried that we'd lose that going over to Audi Field. I think it's pretty clear in many regards we have, at least we have for the opener. So I'm hopeful that things will change. But to put this in the context of a family, I think is the best way to describe it. The family is not whole right now. And people who have enjoyed something so simple and so unifying like soccer for years and years together are now left screaming across the street at each other because of, again, an ownership group that has not put in the necessary resources towards maintaining this club in a healthy way heading into this new stadium.
I want to be clear on my position on this. And I don't know if you know, you remember Charlie Bohm's tweet off the top of your head, or if you've even seen it yet. But he tweeted out basically what the yearly revenue generating from the season ticket holders, non-supporters groups, the suite holders, and the baller suite holders, and then the club seat holders. And it's in the tens of millions of dollars per year that they're generating from these four different avenues. Which then leads me back to, why can't you just turn 1,500 tickets a game over to the three supporters groups and let them do what they do best, which is put the cherry on top of the sundae of good product on the field and, wow, I don't get this at a basketball game. I don't see this at a Capitals game. Skins fans aren't like this, which then brings the people back. And that's the crushing part about everything is that because they refuse to give those 1,500 tickets to three different supporters groups because they don't want them making an extra dollar off of, for whatever reason their reasons are. Now we, you and I, are in a conversation about race, about classism, about gentrification, when nobody in that stadium is thinking, who are watching the game, are thinking to themselves, wow, I wish there weren't so many Latinos here. Or, wow, this place is really, really white. I can't get into this anymore. But because of that snowball that they have formed when they decided we're only going to work with the Screaming Eagles, now we have people on all different sides coming up with reasons why they're not the real fans and we are, but they're not the real fans and we are. And that's the part that makes me slump my shoulders and that makes me go, this was not a great day on Saturday.
And why is it happening? Again, because maximizing profit seems to be the only real priority for the people in charge. As you mentioned, you could have found a solution to this that may have cut into your profit some. But that's a very short-term way of looking at things. As you mentioned, if you create a cool atmosphere and everybody buys in and you're sold out for the next 20 years, did it really hurt your profits that much? And I think it's in all of those little things where the connection to the community, the connection to the fan is not being prioritized over profit, is where this institution that for so long meant so much to so many could really, really critically lose its place in the D.C. sports landscape, new stadium or not. I'll give you another example, Roach. They didn't provide free tickets to their academy players for Saturday night's game. They were doing that at RFK. To me, if you're not letting the kids who play in the youth setup for your team go to opening night at the new stadium, or they can dream about playing for the team or being an executive for the team or growing up and being a fan of the team, then you're totally missing the point of what you are as a soccer club.
Yes.
Forget what you are as a franchise and forget what you are as a business. The kids that wear your shirt every weekend, and who, by the way, still pay to be a part of your academy system, which most MLS clubs don't make kids do anymore. The fact that they don't have a free ticket, to me, says the folks making the decisions have all the wrong priorities. And we keep coming back to that. The priority is always maximizing profit. It's not the supporters groups. It's not the atmosphere. It's not the kids. It's not the health of the club. It's maximizing profit in the near term. And that is very short-sighted. And I don't think a soccer club runs best when it's operating in such a short-sighted manner.
Great point.
And that has to be stated here.
Great point. The other point that I would bring up, since you mentioned that, was why am I seeing pictures of Marcelo Sarvis in the stands? Why am I seeing on Chris Korb's Instagram that he's in the nosebleed seats? Where is Bobby Boswell? Why wasn't every DC United player invited to go onto the field pregame and experience and see the field that was built on the backs of their efforts over the last 20 years? I know they had Moreno. I know they had Harks. I know they had Agus. Every player should have been invited, given a ticket, and been brought out onto the field pregame. And I don't know why that wasn't happening.
Let me ask you this, because you worked with the old front office. You worked with the Kyle Sheldons, the Mark McClure,
yep,
the Doug Hicks. If they were in charge, do you think those guys would have been there?
Never. Well, they would have been on the field, yes.
Yep.
And they would have all been in a club seat where we could have panned to them the entire game and said, they're the guys. There's the DC United alumni.
It's a tie to the past. It's saying that our past matters. It's remembering the good times as we celebrate the next generation of good times. It's really simple stuff, Roach. You are not a sports media professional. Like you, that's the idea that you just had is very basic, but it wasn't carried out. These are things that people who are paid to do this are missing time and time again. And when you love something as much as people like you and I love DC United, it is really deeply hurtful, but also frustrating to watch the club flounder in the way that it is at the critical moment in its history that it's in.
So, last thing. We talked very briefly about not pursuing or not looking for a solution. Let's be arbitrators for a moment and say that all three supporters groups went to arbitration with the club and decided that whatever the arbiter decides is how we're going to do things moving forward. You're the arbitrator, Sebi. You're the mediator of this kerfuffle. How does it end in a way that everybody doesn't get what they want, but everybody has compromised and has come to the table in support of the club or the team on the field?
So not knowing the exact economics of what DC United is offering in terms of tickets and that, it's difficult for me to say numbers.
And by the way, I'm gonna jump on to ownership side for 1 second. I wish Barb Bravo was a little more transparent in the businesses that in how they did business in the past, so that we can evaluate how they can do business in the future. They've been very, very quick to release emails from Tom Hunt. They have been less quick, District Ultras have, they've been less quick to really be transparent and say, this is how we did business, this is how we made money, this is what we did with the money. And for me, that's the number one thing that I would like Barb Brava to do publicly to get this process moving forward. Because then, if I see their books and I see what they're doing, then I have 100% of my animosity towards the front office. But as you're holding back things, I still have that thing in my head going, well, yeah, but why did they choose Screaming Eagles? Why did they? And if it comes down to race, then that's a big problem with the front office. But until you show me your books and show me how you did business, I always have to have that nagging bit of doubt in my mind.
Well, the return question then is, why don't you have similar doubts about Screaming Eagle?
Do we know that they did not open their books? Again, this is what I mean, transparency. This is what I will say this. They left, DC United left the table in the fall. Everybody agrees with that, and had no communications with the other two supporters groups from there on out. That's all on the ownership group. Why did they leave the table? What did they hear from the other two ownership or the other two supporters groups that said to them, we can't do business with these guys?
I don't know. And if they have that, they should say it. Tom Hunt, who you mentioned,
yeah,
has hinted at skimming off the top,
yep,
by members of the supporters groups. That's a pretty serious accusation. And if he's going to hint at that, I think it's on Mr. Hunt to come out and show us the proof of what he's talking about.
Agreed.
Because by picking the Screaming Eagles and not picking Barra Brava and then making those hints, he's essentially saying that the Barra Brava are the ones that are guilty of doing this. Now,
yes, he
if
is.
You look at how supporters groups work around the rest of the world, there's a model that is not very dissimilar to what we see here. Clubs give supporter groups tickets at a discount. They sell at a markup, and they keep the money and use it for their means. Whatever their means could be: barbecue and food before the game, drinks before the game,
TIFOs,
signage.
Yep.
And as was hinted at by Tom Hunt, could end up with some money going to line the pockets of those that are in charge of the supporters groups. I'm not suggesting that about Barra Brava, but I'm suggesting that that is a model that is followed across the world.
Yes.
And in any business, you don't know who's skimming off the top or not skimming off the top. And likewise with any nonprofit organization, unless you're in there looking at the books, you don't know. I'll simplify it very much for you like this. Rocha, I felt like when the announcement came out that Screaming Eagles were going to be, and I think the quote was, kind of take a lead role,
yes,
in game day activities, what it felt like to me was a parent choosing one kid over the other.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you can do that. So whatever the financial, whatever the numbers crunch out to, where there's a resolution that works for both sides, I'll leave that to Barra, and I'll leave that to the front office to bridge that gap and to know the specifics of what's needed there. What I will say this is, I don't think the front office can move forward effectively with a plan that prioritizes or puts a special designation or power on one group over the other.
Can't
I
do
think
it.
That's a very, I think it's a very unhealthy dynamic between the fans themselves and then between the fans and the front office. So I think really the first big step, aside from making sure that Barra feels like they've got the same offer that the Screaming Eagles have, because that's what they've been requesting from day one, is to make sure that everybody's on level ground. You can't pick between your kids. You
nope.
just can't do it.
Nope. And to come back to the supporters' side, You can't do that. And then you also can't turn around and then give your favorite kid exactly what the other kid was asking for and then say, but we couldn't give that to you guys. It's very unseemly, and it stinks not just for the supporters groups, but for the fans, because Bar Brava District Ultras were missed on Saturday. That's no slight to the Screaming Eagles. They sang as well as they could sing. They made as much noise as they could make. Having another set and two sets of supporters in there picking up the slack when they tired out was absolutely needed, and those drums were missed. They had one drum in there. The rest of the drums were missed. The entire atmosphere was absolutely missed, and they need to figure this out, and I'm speaking to all three supporters groups and the front office. It needs to be figured out.
You're right about the noise level, Roach. You're dead on about it. It was not, for all of the goals, for all of the buzz of the night, it was not nearly as loud as it should have been.
It should have been.
And it was one of the first things I noticed in there. I was like, wow, it is really muted in here.
Yes.
It is really strangely muted. And I think some of that has to do with my expectations of what would make its way over from RFK.
Yep.
And a lot of those people were there, but they were not in full voice and they were not in unison. There was a lot of people in Barb Robert shirts there.
Yes,
they may
there
have
were.
Been in and around the stadium, but they were not doing what they usually do. And again, that is such a critical part of the DC United game day experience. You ask anyone who's been to a DC United game from 1996 until 2017, and they probably know what Barra Brava is. And that doesn't, you don't know, that's not, if you ask somebody about a Wizards game or a Cats game, they're not talking about the fans.
No.
So the fact that one of the first things, the most recognizable parts of the DC United brand is a group of fans that weren't at their opening day in any organized fashion tells you a lot about where this team and this franchise is right now.
Yep, it was absolutely, and I want to give credit to the Eagles where it's due. The entire supporters area was packed, and the chanting and the singing was perfectly acceptable, but it was not opening day. And you contrast it with what I saw the next day in L.A. as LAFC was playing Portland Timbers and their shots to the supporters groups. That's what I usually see from the United supporters groups. And it would have been awesome to see that in the steep rake of Audi Field with all the supporters groups together. And honestly, Sebi, where I'm at right now is I hope that they can figure this out before the end of the season. But this ownership group needs to leave before everything will start healing.
I think you're not far from the truth there, my man. I think this ownership group has accomplished something that no other ownership group could accomplish. And I mean two things. They tore apart the fan base and they built a stadium. However you prioritize
wow.
those two is up to you. But they have done, I think, enough. They've done enough for DC United, both good and bad. Let's get somebody in here with local ties. Let's get somebody in here with real serious deep pockets. And let's get somebody in here that respects the history of this club and what this fan base is, not what a few executives think it could be.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate your candor. I appreciate you coming on for as long as you did. We obviously didn't figure anything out.
We never do, right?
We never do, but I will tell you this, and on a really, really serious note, I have a different understanding of where the supporters groups are coming from, where you specifically are coming from, and why you're coming from that place than I did before this conversation. So it was extremely enlightening for me to hear and to speak with you.
And I'll say I'm with you, Roach. Like, I want this to be good. I want this to be healed. I want the front office to make the right moves and bring the District Ultra and Barra Brava back. Well, one reason alone. I've been banging this drum for a really long time. I think this is a great soccer city, and I think that DC United in a new downtown stadium, done right, has limitless potential. And I know you said at the beginning of this conversation that the Caps might be too far out of reach for now. I don't believe that.
Wow.
I believe there is no ceiling on soccer in this city if done right. And so that's why I'm so passionate and at times upset about it, because I feel like what is a major monster opportunity for my sport in my city is being wasted. And I don't think you get a second chance to do this. So So I'm hopeful that as we continue to go through this transition, we heal these wounds and we start to make the decisions that will benefit this sport in this city the most down the road.
Sebi pops up around the 50-minute mark on the latest episode of Max and Herc podcast on ESPN. That's when he really gets in and he breaks down all of the supporter stuff and the how we got to this point. I definitely urge you to check that out. And, of course, you can watch ESPN soccer coverage as Sebi's on all the time. Dude, really appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Hopefully next time we can just actually talk about how our favorite team is doing on the field.
I look forward to it, my man. I don't know that that'll be soon, but I look forward to that day.
Thank you, Sebi. And before we sign off this edition of the Sphere of Roach, I just want to make sure I am kind of clear on my position. The divisiveness and the fatigue in the supporters group struggle has weighed on me in the sense that there have been supporters who have inferred that the people who are not in supporters groups are not real fans. And I'm not speaking as all of the supporters in the supporters groups have said that. It's just been coming out in social media. And that's where the fatigue is coming in, because for me personally, it is starting to feel like I'm not a real fan because I am not yelling and screaming the entire match. And I just think there's room at the table for everybody. And the people who yell and scream are just as valuable and no more valuable than the people who do not yell and scream but pay for their tickets and support the club in their own way. And I hope that makes it a little bit clearer. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sphere of Roach. If you got through this hour-plus edition, I appreciate it. Check out some of the other more lighter-hearted episodes of the Sphere of Roach through the podcast that you should subscribe to. I hear my music, which means it's probably time to sign off.
For show information, go to pitchpass.com.